Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from englishwithkirsty.com. I'm Kirsty, and I support multilingual professionals to discover their voice in English. On the podcast, we talk about language, learning, and intentional communication. We hear about my guests' language journeys and share tips that help you communicate in a way that makes sense and sounds like you. Everyone, and welcome back to the English with Kirsty podcast. And today we have a new guest, somebody that I don't know very well, so we will fix that, but you will also hopefully learn a lot today. Welcome, Helen. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Kirsty.
Yeah, let's find out who you are then. So how would you introduce yourself to anyone that hadn't met you before or didn't know about your work?
Well, first of all, especially as we're on a podcast and people can't see me and don't have context, I would explain that I'm originally from New Zealand, because otherwise I find people search for that funny accent. And so I tell you straight away, so then you can concentrate on the words that we're using rather than my funny accent. But I am now living in Switzerland, and I am a communications coach for multicultural, multilingual, international professionals to help them speak with more clarity and confidence.
Why did you decide to get into this area of work? What's your story?
So it wasn't really a decision, I would say. I fell into it almost by accident. I realized that I was very frustrated by very smart people who had a lot of different ideas and a lot to give to the world. They were experts in their field. However, they lacked the communication skills to help them get those messages and ideas across. And so it was a windy road to get to my current role as communications coach, but it passed through human resources, recruitment, teaching English in Italy, and then working in non-governmental organizations and health in Switzerland. And that's where it really became apparent to me that I love helping people, and that because of my background, including my time in amateur theatre as a child and singing and music, that I could help people, smart, smart people, get their ideas out to the world.
Okay, yeah, and I can understand this, because I come across this too in some of, a lot of what I do with people who've got some really good ideas, and for whatever reason, I think we do is quite different, but like it's the same thing where, like, you can see that someone has a lot to give, and then like either they don't know how to communicate a message, or we have these self-sabotaging behaviors. I have them too, but and then they stop that message getting out. So I was looking at your website, and would you say that a lot of what you do focuses on public speaking, or was I just looking at the pages on the website that focus on public speaking?
It's interesting that you say that. I have struggled to describe what I do over the years, and it has evolved. So a lot of people imagine that a speaker coach works just with people who speak on big stages, doing TEDx or big industry conferences. But in fact, most of my clients come to me because it's in the smaller moments that they struggle. So it's getting the ideas across in a team meeting, for example, or being heard when they're speaking to the board. So that's not necessarily formal public speaking as we might think of it sometimes. It's more communication as a whole, how to give feedback, how to run a good interview, how to connect with people on a very human level. And my main focus is twofold. The first is helping people get over stage fright or manage their nervous system. And the second is the use of the voice, our very unique, special instrument that many people have never learned to use very well.
Okay, and some people don't even like I've come across people saying, oh, I don't like my I don't like my voice, or sometimes it's yeah, my voice is okay, but I don't like to hear myself speaking in X language. Or but if we're going to work with this tool that we have, and we can't just swap it out, we have to, I guess, start by learning to accept it, or if you can't like it, and then learn to like it as well. But it's like this is a powerful tool that we have for communicating with other people.
Absolutely. And the good news is we can change our voice. We can improve it. Lots of people say they don't like their voice. And once you break it down and find out what they don't like about it, most of the things are actually able to be changed. And so our voice is a, and our way of communicating is just a habit that we've created. And so if you speak too high, you can lower your pitch. If you speak too quickly, you can slow down. If you speak with a monotone, you can add more melody. So there's actually a lot you can do with your voice to improve it if you don't like it.
And also that sometimes, like, I don't like what I do with my voice, and I can say that. So sometimes when I'm using one of my other languages, I don't like the person I become because of what I do with it, but it's not my voice. It's just that there's a disconnect between this voice that comes out because of the other behaviors I'm adopting. And yeah, I don't like that voice because it's not me. It's not who I am.
Yeah,
So
that's fascinating. I mean, speaking multiple languages is really interesting. And I love that conversation because we learning a language is so tied up with different things, different insecurities, or it's a time. And so it can really create a almost a persona that is not necessarily yourself. However, what I always say is if in your native language or your first language, you like how you sound, or you think you sound more confident, or whatever it is, then it means that you can make those sounds and sound like that. And so, yes, you may have picked up some other habits in another language, but if you sound warm, confident, engaging in the first language, then you can definitely use those elements in the second or third language.
Yeah, and I think that's really for I'm talking about my clients, but also for myself, like something that we lose sight of. Like, we focus so much on, maybe if we're delivering something, is this right? Is this okay? Is this the right message? But the right message with the wrong delivery is not the right message, because people are, it's not going to land with people.
Absolutely. I mean, for me in French or Italian, that I both speak okay in, I have a whole lot of level of insecurities, and I don't always like the way that I come across. So it is a lot of work. But as you say, you need the content first, so the message to be clear first. And that doesn't really, you have to have the vocabulary and the structure around that. That's absolutely core. However, what I always say is the delivery of that is like the wrapping of a present. So the present's already good, and then you've got a nice bow on the top, and that is the voice. And we're so sensitive to how things are transmitted to us, or how we receive the messages. It's not just the words. So it's definitely something to pay attention to, and that can make a huge difference, I think, in language learners.
And it is the wrapping, but also it's important to leave time for this. Like, don't be so, like, all your time is taken up, and then right at the end, oh yeah, I need to deliver this well. It's like, make sure that's built into the whatever you're planning to do, make sure that you leave time for that, to get the nice wrapping paper, to know where the scissors are. I don't know if you want to carry on with that analogy, but don't leave it to the thing that, oh, I need to do that and I don't have any time. So yeah, well, it'll be okay. Yes,
And you
it's
need to do that. You need to speak out loud. You can't just go, well, I've got the words in my head, you know. So I always encourage people to practice answering a question or presenting with the words actually out loud, even if you're on your own, because sometimes the journey from what is in our head or even on paper to what comes out of our mouth is quite long and difficult. And so when you practice well, as close to the real situation as possible, then you are more likely to one, feel more confident, and two, sound more like you want to sound.
And you don't know what that is. Pets are really good for this. I don't have an animal here with me at the moment, but Pets are really good bait because then you don't feel quite so self-conscious if you're telling a dog or a cat. But
I love that.
yeah, I love animals, so I always bring them in somehow. But I mean, we've been talking about the voice, but you did mention two things. If we just circle back to the nervous system, what do you think is the thing that you wish people knew about this area of your work that they don't like? What is one of the biggest misconceptions about working together with our nervous systems to get good results?
So a lot of people assume that you're either born confident or not. And that is not the case. Confidence is built through action, building up competence, and then you feel and look and sound more confident. So a lot of people say, oh, well, that's not for me. I'm not a confident speaker, so I won't do it. I won't try. And that is such a pity. Because if you don't try, indeed, you will not get better and you will not grow in confidence. So my message is to not wait until you feel confident. Take little steps towards your goal. Take the action to build the confidence along the way.
And that doesn't have to be a huge thing, does it? You're talking about little steps. It can be sometimes we look at where we want to get and think, oh, I can't go there. It's too far. It's too big, too much. But the little steps can help us to get from where we are to where we want to be because they're making this journey more manageable.
Absolutely.
What could that look like? Some of these smaller steps. Can you think of an example to show how that works in practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to be employed, for example, in another language, but you lack a little bit of experience and possibly your speaking is rusty, which is often often the way with many people who learn languages at school. Try something a little bit less high stakes first, rather than straight into a job interview. See if you can join a group where you can do a language exchange, for example, with conversation exchange. Start reading out loud some books in that language. Have a conversation with someone who will be supportive in your journey in improving your spoken language. I remember when I first came to Geneva, Switzerland, and I'd learned French at school, but learning French at school in New Zealand was not necessarily that. It meant that I did not have such a good level. I had some of the basics and I lacked a lot of confidence. But I was really fortunate to have a colleague who was very understanding, and I don't even remember how we got into conversation, but she was someone with whom I could practice my imperfect French. And slowly but surely, she helped me build up the confidence. And we went to the gym together at lunchtime. And along the way, for example, I remember I forgot my lock for the locker. And I didn't know the name for the lock or how to ask if I could borrow one from the gym. And I will never forget that phrase. She taught me two pieces in that walk to the gym that I repeated, 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 checked with her, is it correct? And then I delivered it to the person at the front desk. And they were blown away by my beautiful French because I also used a very formal way of asking for it. And they were so happy. And they said, oh, usually we'd charge, but for you, because you ask so beautifully, here you are, you can have it for free today.
Oh, that's
Isn't
nice.
that such a nice story? So it doesn't need to be something grand. And I think it's much more productive if you do those little steps, find those small opportunities to stretch yourself gradually beyond your comfort zone and try something different until you actually can do it and celebrate along the way. That's the other thing as well. Those little moments are worth celebrating because if we don't, we rush off to think about all the hundreds of thousands of different things we can't do, we're not good at, rather than focusing on the successes that we're having along the way.
Yeah, I think sometimes when you do this, you learn things that you didn't even plan to learn. Like when I have never been employed to use German or any of my other languages, but now I use them as a self-employed person. But before, I thought I wanted to do this in some way. At first, I thought I was going to be working for a German company, and that didn't happen. But I did some volunteering in German, and I thought it would be fun, but I also thought this would really help me to improve my spoken German and at the same time do something interesting. And that did happen, but I learned so much more about like different communication styles in German and how to negotiate when you've got a bunch of people who want to do things in a completely different way, and about the difference between how you show up in writing and how you show up in person. Because at that time I did a lot in writing, and then I went to a meeting, and that was more of a challenge because people have got to know this Kirsty in writing, and then suddenly, and then yeah, I made some friends as well. And when I came away from that project at the end, I didn't realize how it was going to be useful at the time. I just thought, I'm moving on to new things. But now I look back and I see from some of those experiences how much I learned about the day-to-day, I don't know, running of a project or just communicating with people in German in real situations. I thought I was just practicing my speaking skills, but I gained a lot of insights about lots of different personalities, how, even people when it's their first language, how differently they communicate and what are the strategies to work well with these different types of people in German. And I was like, wow, I didn't sign up for this, but that's actually really useful.
Hugely enriching.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, have a plan, find these steps, but don't be surprised if you go up on some little journeys of your own and learn more things, because yeah, we have our plans and then the life happens. But I think you're right, what you were saying about your experience with your colleague, like people do respond well to you when they can see that you're trying. I think we're so focused on being perfect sometimes. It's like, no, people really do appreciate that when you are making the effort.
Absolutely. And it makes a huge difference having that support system around you.
Yeah. Good people. So we were talking about confidence and building confidence, but these are things that happen in the time leading up to something. But if somebody needs to speak, I'm not talking about like a big international summit or whatever. It's just like maybe in a team meeting, maybe in front of colleagues. There's that point immediately before when you forget all the good stuff that you did, and you feel like, oh no, I'm gonna have to do it in half an hour, and that's stressful. So how can people deal with these situations? Like they've done the good preparation work, but they're still gonna have to deliver. So what are some good tips that people can think about in this time just before?
Sure. So one thing is knowing that your body will react. Right, your heart will start racing, your hands will get sweaty, you might feel butterflies, you might feel totally distracted or as though your mind goes blank. And these reactions are all normal. They are not signals to stop, they are signals to say that this is important and you are stretching yourself. So just recognize them and say, ah, there I am, I'm alive, this is important, I'm ready to go. But of course, those symptoms of stage fright can be overwhelming. So, in that moment, it's really helpful to have some go-to techniques to calm your system, to remind it that it's not a life or death situation, which is signals that you're getting. And
Run.
the best signal, the best technique is breathing. And I always sound say that it sounds so silly, but this is the easiest, quickest way to reset your nervous system into a state that is more productive and effective than the fight or flight, which you were feeling. And the most important thing with breathing techniques, because there are many that you can try, is that the out breath, the exhale, is longer and controlled. If you think about being stressed, you probably think about shallow breathing, sort of breathing, right? Almost a panic attack or very, very shallow out of breath breathing. If you can take that under control and slow down your breath, then you will send signals to your brain and your body that you are safe and that it's not a situation that is life-threatening. And in that situation, if you manage to calm down your system, then you will find that you can think more clearly, be more creative, be able to connect with the people that you're speaking to. So that is the number one tip. Breathe deeply. And people say, oh, just breathe, it'll be fine. No, take it
to breathe, to stay alive.
Yeah, we breathe, but we don't think about it. Mm. Taking in control, you can breathe into a more sustained, more comfortable nervous system.
Yeah,
have you ever
that
tried
is the
a,
difference.
have you ever tried one of these breathing techniques, Kirsty?
I do it not so much with public speaking, but if I'm going to have to do something that I know is going to be challenging, like a difficult conversation, maybe, then I do it. And I also find that the things that I tell myself at that time also help. Like, you know, even if it's just like, I am safe, like,
Yes.
I can't say what's going to happen, like nothing bad will happen because I don't know, but I know now I'm safe. I have the tools that I need to do this, like these short phrases that we can, it's not like speculating about the future, it's saying what is true now.
Yes.
And at the same time as breathing out, I kind of think these things and remind myself so that I can be like focus on them rather than the other things.
Yeah, I mean, that's so important to listen into what you're telling yourself and catch hold of any of those negative phrases that come in saying, oh, they're going to see that you're nervous, or oh, what are you doing? You shouldn't be doing this, or who are you to do this? Reframing, saying you can do this, you're choosing to try something new, all of these positive phrases. Again, they sound a bit silly when you say them like that, but they actually help a lot in putting you in a more productive state to communicate well.
And reminding you of what is real, because I think sometimes we can go down all these, like, we think of the worst thing that could happen. And I guess I've learned with a lot of these situations, the worst thing that could happen isn't usually what's going to happen. Maybe there are other unexpected things that you didn't see coming, but like we can focus so much on the worst thing for us, but also to say, okay, well, if that does happen, what does that mean? Like what, because when we start to question, like, why don't you want that to happen? It's often not as bad as we think it will. I mean, if you completely forget what you're going to say in front of a big group of people, that is embarrassing. But most of the time, the thing that we think is going to happen, A, probably won't, and B, may not be as bad as we are telling ourselves it will be, so that we can protect ourselves.
Yeah. And, you know, thinking about forgetting your words in front of someone or making a mistake, most people listening to you, they're rooting for you. They want you to do well. And they're quite selfish. So they're probably not even thinking about you. They're probably thinking about themselves. What are they going to have for lunch? Did they set an alarm for whatever? So that also can help, that realization can help take the spotlight off from you, where you feel a lot of pressure, all eyes on you, and back to the audience. People are very egotistical. It's just the way we're wired. And most people are more concerned about themselves than they are about anyone else. And a lot of the time, they won't even notice that you forgot something or made a mistake. And anyway, we're not aiming for perfect, right? We're aiming for connection always. So most people will appreciate if you take any mistakes and just excuse yourself or just move on. They will see that as courage and they'll respect you for it as well.
Yeah, and I think that's particularly relevant. I mean, it's relevant anyway, but because a lot of the work that I do is with people who are working with English as an additional language, like that's one of the big fears that people have about making a mistake, about not having exactly the right vocabulary. So do you have any stories to share about when you've done that, or any tips specifically related to working in an additional language?
Yeah, so most of my clients also speaking English as a second, third, or fourth language. So I have many, many stories. What I find most common is people automatically apologizing or saying their English is not good enough. And I don't know what good enough means. I don't know what they're aiming to sound like. But what I always remind them is it's not about being perfect. You're in this role, in this job for a reason, and it's not because of your B2, C1 level English. It's because of your history, your experience, your skills that you're bringing to this, and also your communication skills. So that sort of upsets me when people say, oh, my English isn't perfect. Well, I'm not looking for perfect or good enough. As long as the communication is not broken, that is the most important thing. And what I find with most people is that their English is much better than what they think it is. So it shouldn't stop them and hold them back. But again, it comes back to what they're telling themselves.
Yeah, if you're saying that out loud to others, you're also saying it to yourself. And I've done it too, not with English, but with when I was learning other languages, certainly at the beginning, I would introduce myself like that. And I was like, why are you doing that? You tell other people not to do it, and now you're doing it. But it's almost like I don't know, because even if somebody said, oh, actually, your whatever is good, it's like I didn't believe them anyway. So the whole conversation is pointless, because if you do really believe that about yourself, you're not going to take the positive feedback to heart. So it's more about a conversation to have with yourself later. But introducing yourself like that with something, you'd never say, oh, hi, I'm Kirsty and I'm not very good at my job. I mean, nobody does that. So why do we do it with languages?
Exactly. And then you focus, you get the audience to focus on that, whether you say, oh, I'm a bit nervous today, or I'm not very good at presenting, or sorry, my English isn't very good, then that's not very kind or positive way to even start the interaction, because that puts the audience saying, oh, I'm going to look out for that then. And then they get distracted potentially. So it's really, really not helpful. I think we need to get rid of that. If you're speaking another language, that means that you have at least two, and that is brilliant. And in French, we would say chapeau. We'll give you a hat. Bow our hat to you, because you're doing a very difficult job by translating and using multiple languages. And that's so valuable. So valuable, because it teaches us so much about the other cultures and other ways of being. And I think we need more of that in society. So give yourself some credit. We're not aiming for perfection. We're aiming for connection.
I like that. I like that line. And for us to remember, because if you like, short phrases are easier to remember. I think that's really important. So I know that you have a new book. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about what it's about, who it's for.
Sure. We've
I
already
haven't read it
started.
yet.
Okay. Very good.
It's on my list, but I haven't read it yet, so I can't talk to that. But yeah, you wrote it, so you tell us.
Yes. So I wrote this book for my clients and for exactly the sort of people that we're talking about. Really smart people who hold themselves back because they feel nervous or are telling themselves negative things. The title is Courageous Action. And the reason it's called courageous action is exactly as I explained before, you need to act to build up your confidence. And it's courageous because you will feel nervous while you're doing it. It's not a comfortable action, it's not an easy action. I like to think of a comfort zone as sort of a circle where we sit in, and around us, we see the situations where we feel comfortable, where we feel confident. And then outside of that, is the stretch zone and the growth zone. And so the idea is to slowly expand the comfort zone to encompass more situations so that you are sharing your ideas and message with the world. So the book is really practical. It explains why we feel nervous. It gets you to look at how you know you're nervous, in what situations, how it shows up in your body and in your mind. Then I have a couple of chapters on very practical techniques. And the first one is breathing, as we already touched on. The next one is getting into your body. So, because when we're stressed, when we're worried, we get very into our head. We need to get back into our body to feel safe. So, there are some grounding techniques and suggestions there. Then there's a chapter on the mindset. What I call soundtracks, which I borrowed from John Acuff. And that's all about what we were talking about, Kirsty, with the negative things we're telling ourselves, starting to tune into those, recognize them, and reframe them to something more positive. Then we have information on how to practice well, how to prepare well. And at the end of the book, I have a bank of little actions that you can take, those small courageous actions to help you improve and build your confidence along the way to slowly but steadily feel more confident and start speaking up.
And this is for anyone. So this is for if we're using our first language or an additional language, it doesn't matter, does it? These will work for anyone who
absolutely.
wants
And
to be more confident.
It's specifically for communication because that's my area. But honestly, I think a lot of the techniques will help you in many other areas of your life as well. It's very practical. There's space for reflections. There's I challenge you along the way to keep acting, and it's really for anyone who wants to develop their communication skills and finally feel more confident.
Yeah, I will be reading it. It's something that I think both to be better informed, but also to help me practically. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of information there that will help others. So we're going to put the link for the book in the show notes page. And I know that you have it's available as a hard copy and online. You have
Yes, it's
both.
in Kindle, in English and in French. And maybe I'll just say for your listeners, it's also targeted at non-native English speakers, because that is a lot of the world that I work with as well. So I've tried to keep the language accessible, with not too much jargon or, you know, so it should be reasonably an easy read. And it's the sort of book that you can pick up and put down, and keep by your bed or on your desk for easy access.
And also stretch yourself. Like I intend to use it as someone who, you know, works with German and a couple of others. But it's like if we're talking about English, we can apply it across other languages if you have other languages as well, because it's really about you. It's not about they're just tools that we use.
Yep.
Some of them we have more practice with than others, but they are tools for communication. And so the real heart of what we're talking about is the people behind the communication.
Absolutely.
And so I'm looking forward to reading your book. Maybe we can do another session in a while when I've read it, and we can discuss the book afterwards. But yeah,
yeah, I'd love
to
to
do that.
Do
Yeah,
that and see I could interview you and see what you learned from it, and how you were applying some of the learnings. That'd be brilliant. And it's never ends, you know, this journey never ends. If you continue to grow, which we hope most people do across their lifespan, and develop, you will continuously come across situations that are a little bit scary and beyond that comfort zone. So it is something that will last for life. It's not like you learn these techniques and then, oh, I used them once and they're done. You know, it's a constant refining and finding your way of stretching yourself and feeling good along the way.
And I guess the truth is that we can't, I mean, obviously preparation is really important, especially if you're going to be sharing ideas in a more structured way. But at the same time, there is an element of trust in yourself too. And in part of the confidence comes from knowing that you will be okay. If something happens that you didn't anticipate, and we can't anticipate everything, it's also learning to not fall apart when things don't go exactly according to plan, for those of us who really enjoy that element of preparation and planning, because it makes us feel safe. There is also life happening, and sometimes we don't know what's going to happen, but it'll still
we
be
never
okay.
we never know, no matter how well prepared we are. And I think you absolutely nailed it there when you say it's all about trust. It's about trusting yourself, knowing that you will find a way, and knowing that the other people are also cheering you on. There are very few situations where other people don't want you to do well. And most people respect if you're speaking another language and will help you. So that's also trusting humankind in a way, but mostly, yeah, trusting yourself that you will find a way and it won't be a disaster. And if it is a disaster, We learn from those as well, don't
Yeah,
we?
it's a
Learn from the
learning
failures.
opportunity.
Yeah. So reflect what went well, what didn't go well. How would you do it better next time?
Yeah, that's true. And what we worry about now in, I don't know, 6 months, a year, we could look back and think, oh, okay, yeah, that happened, but
Why did I lose sleep over that?
it's
Exactly.
not. Yeah. So what is the best way for people to be in contact with you, to see what you're up to? How do you like to keep in touch with people?
So on social media, it's mostly LinkedIn. So you can find my name quite easily because it's a funny name. Otherwise, you can check out my website, presentpotential.ch. CH is because I live in Switzerland. And otherwise, yeah, look out for my book, Courageous Action, in on Amazon, or I also have a website specifically for that, where I also share success stories of people who've taken courageous action. So maybe I can get one from you, Kirsty, after you've read the book and
Yeah,
taken
okay.
another courageous action. You can write me up a little story, or do a little video to explain how it helped you.
I'm intrigued to see what courageous action future Kirsty will take now.
Oh, me too. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, well, I will include all of these links in our description on the show notes page, and thank you for coming and sharing what you do. I think there's some really practical tips there. So I hope that anyone who's listening to this will go away with an idea of something they can do, like a small step that they can take. And yeah, let's keep the conversation going.
Thank you so much, Kirsty, and good luck, everyone.
Yeah, it takes courage, but that's a good thing. Okay, then thanks everyone. I hope you enjoyed our episode. We look forward to hearing if you want to share what action you want to take. This will be going on LinkedIn, for example. So you can share in the comments there. And in the meantime, have a great week, everyone, and have fun with your languages.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.